Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 3 of State of Our Nation. Now, this morning, we are going to take a look at COVID-19 and Barbados's efforts to reboot tourism. Now, since Barbados began its battle with COVID-19, the consideration has always been the balance between lives and livelihood. Barbados has never closed its borders, and its protocols governing travel has constantly adjusted based on the science. It is no doubt, though, that the stringent protocols are a disincentive to travel, but the second wave of COVID-19, which we experienced last year, has certainly proven that it's more costly not to have them in place. It appears that opening up to commercial travel and cruises is always synonymous with the rise in cases. We have now pinned our hopes on vaccination, and we have again rebooted tourism sector. We have just had our first cruise ship in just last week. We are already, however, having a scare with the Celebrity Millennium cruise ship with 2 passengers testing positive, and obviously that has elicited some reaction from the public. Now, BAMP has always been a check for government with regards to the protocols. I have with me here President of BAMP, Dr. Linda Williams, who would be co-hosting this episode with me as we look at this latest effort to restart the tourism product. Dr. Williams, a good place to jump in. After that slight scare that we had with the passengers testing positive on that cruise vessel, albeit days after they left Barbados, how confident, and I know that BAMP would have played an instrumental role in drafting those protocols. How confident are you still that, you know, those protocols will hold?
Thank you for having me, Colville. And restarting the cruise industry and having travelers come in to go on cruises with Barbados as a home port always carried some risk. But one of the things that we hoped to do was to put those people safely in a bubble so that it minimized the contacts that they had with the Barbados population. So that there's fully vaccinated cruise passengers and, for the most part, fully vaccinated crew as well, at least those who are in touch with the cruise passengers. And so that in itself, having those people fully vaccinated, that's one layer of decreasing the risk of transmission. The other layer is having them pre-test before they go on board, and also having them test before they come off the ship to go to any activities in the country. Having said all that, you may say, well, how is it that they did all of those things and it's still possible for someone to test positive?
Just slip through the cracks, yeah.
Right. It may not necessarily be a slip through the cracks, though. For example, you may have someone who may test positive on board after having tested negative elsewhere because they had been infected at some point in time, but they were still shedding viral particles. So they might have been immunized, they got a vaccine, but they were infected previously, and there were still cells shedding some virus particles. So they're not actually actively infective, but you're picking it up on the test as they're being infected. However, it is possible to be fully vaccinated and also to have infection with COVID-19. What the vaccination does, it prevents you from getting sick and being hospitalized, but it doesn't prevent you from transmitting the virus 100%. It decreases transmission, but it doesn't eliminate it. So it is possible that these people did pick it up at some point in time between Barbados and St. Martin, right? And we can't say exactly where, but that possibility always exists. What is good is that because of the measures in place and because of the protocols in place, they were picked up quickly and they were quarantined early from the rest of the passengers and crew. So yeah, it's very real. Something can always happen. There is no 100% fail-safe system, right? But we have to try to do this thing as safely as we possibly can and to test widely. That's the key. If you have testing ongoing of the people who are at the ports of entry and people who are in the tourism sector, if you have them vaccinated as well and you test, that is as much as we can do as long with vaccinating and testing the passengers. So it's really important that those things be in place.
Now, how do we ensure that I mean, yes, we are testing the crew members. We are testing persons that work within the vicinity of the tourism sector. But let's say something slips into the wider public. How do we, you know, monitor that? And how do we ensure in terms of of vigilance in this department that?
So BAM has been saying for some time, as doctors, we are concerned about ongoing national surveillance, right? And that is particularly among people who are unvaccinated, okay? And there's certain sectors we believe that these people should really understand, or the importance of vaccination be brought home to them in terms of protecting the public, okay? So whether you're in the health sector, whether you're in the tourism sector, whether you're in schools, hospitality, protective services, and working at the ports of entry, all of those people should be vaccinated. But if you're not vaccinated and you work in those areas, what we want is to have a surveillance program. What surveillance is, it means that you're doing regular, ongoing schedule of testing based on a person's risk. So if you are a person who is in contact with the general public on a daily basis, if you're in contact with passengers arriving from overseas and you are one of those people who handle documents or luggage or any of those things, then those are the people that we want to have tested on a regular and routine basis. Now, there has been some pushback against that in Barbados, but in other countries and in other territories, they have actually legislated that if you work in these areas and you're not vaccinated, you have to test. That is not the case here because of the uniqueness of our employment law. While the employer has the right to protect the rest of people who work there and insist that you test, our Employment Rights Act also says that you can't change the terms and conditions of a person who is working. So we got these two things, you know, that have to be balanced and really need to be brought to the social partnership, government. Everyone needs to get in on this discussion about how we're going to make people safe by testing. Because testing is the key. And, of course, vaccination is the key. But in the absence of getting everyone vaccinated, because people may be hesitant for whatever reason, then we have to encourage testing. And although we say that, you know, it's uncomfortable, etc., you're protecting your family, you're protecting the population, you're protecting everyone by knowing your COVID status.
Right. The thing is that we have a saying in my country, when you take an inch, some people take a yard eventually.
Correct.
Now,
a mile in Barbados.
Now, the thing is, once we start talking about balancing lives and livelihoods, we are looking over the livelihoods of those in the tourism sector. But there are other sectors of the public who haven't been working for months now.
Right.
And they too, their livelihoods matter.
Right.
Promoters' lives matter as well,
right.
to be more specific.
Okay.
You know, They are making a compelling case that, you know, well, what about us in this department? And they are also pushing for some latitude with regards to a return to either having a crop over or having parties once more. Obviously, this haywire overseas promotion has also been thrown into the mix as well.
So let's look at the reality on the ground in Barbados. Right now, we are in a situation where we had a peak in January of this year. We came down, and thankfully only we are having a few sporadic cases here and there. We recognize that a lot of people's hard work, right, is what prevented us from being like some other islands, and we're thankful for this. However, we recognize it could change anytime. We have about roughly 20% of our population fully vaccinated. Where we see removal of restrictions and protocols overseas, we see about 50 to 60% of the population fully vaccinated to have widespread removal of restrictions. So let's bear in mind that really, right now, we're only at about 20%. With respect to surveillance and testing, as I said, we really need to get those numbers up. Because if you do 412 tests in a population of 360,000 in a day, and half of those number are travelers, people are either leaving or coming, right? You are actually testing very few people who are here, who are local, who are on the ground, to know what their status is. And is that reflective? So when you talk about a positivity rate of something, that may not be a reflective sample of the population. It may be low, you understand? But
right.
It may not be actually low, right? So we want to get that representative sample by encouraging surveillance testing. And then the next thing that we don't know and we need to be vigilant and mindful of is that the situation has changed, and it's changed all over the world because of these variants of concern. What is the significance of these variants? The variants are significant because they are highly transmissible, right? The Delta variant, right, is now thought to be about 8 times more transmissible than the original COVID-19 strain that was seen. Okay, so that means that it is much more likely to be transmitted between people. So we have to have surveillance ongoing for the presence of variants in our society and regular reporting of that as well. If we have all of those things going and we are looking at our health metrics, not just positivity rate, but other metrics, are not the numbers in hospital, all these different metrics that we have, the number of cumulative number of cases per 100,000 per week and all that kind of thing. If we look at all of these metrics and they're low, and we have the testing, we have the vaccination, we have the surveillance for variants, etc., then we would have to look at, well, let's remove restrictions on mass gatherings. But we can't go from 0 to 100 because we're talking about mass gatherings in its totality. We recognize the importance of festivals and events, and we recognize the importance of them to the economy and to the livelihoods of people. Some people's whole livelihood is dependent on our summer festival, crop over. So we know that this is very important. But what we're saying is, if we have these things in place, a significant increase in people who are fully vaccinated, we have a sustained low positivity rate, we have sustained low number of cases, we have those increased numbers being tested, and we have reported results on a regular basis about variants of concern, then we should be able to consider relaxing the protocols for mass gatherings. That's really in-person events. We can have any amount of virtual events for the festivals, etc., but the in-person events are what people want.
Right, exactly.
So you would have, as a country, then to say, well, okay, we're going to relax mass gatherings as a whole. So whether that you limit the number, you say, okay, 1,000 people, or whether you don't limit the number, you would have to know that you're going to relax mass gatherings as a whole. So that would be for whatever celebrations, funerals, weddings, places of worship, wherever mass gatherings occur. Because you couldn't say, well, okay, you can have one type and not another type. Virus doesn't care what kind of mass gathering it is. The virus just likes people in the same place, close to one another.
Given the laundry list of issues that you would have outlined that needs to be in place,
right,
before we can even contemplate mass gatherings, how far do you think we are as a country from that? And based on that, whatever time frame that we might be looking at, before we can have a cup over or something.
It's in our hands. It's in our hands as a nation. It's in our hands to increase testing. It's in our hands to increase vaccination and to encourage people to come forward. It's in our hands to put the monitoring for the variants of concern in place. And it's in our hands really to monitor the number of cases and to make sure that our labs and all of our systems are fully automated and running properly. That's in our hands to do. If we got all of that achieved, I can't see how we are going to necessarily achieve all of that by August 2021. Should we be so diligent that we achieved all of that in that space of time, then that's where BAM has come in and said, okay, well, look, here's how we should do this safely. But if we don't do it diligently and we're sort of still like, okay, well, this is so important, we're gonna ignore all these other things and just go straight to mass gathering regardless, then that's where the difficulty for us comes in. We recognize the importance of vaccination, and people say, well, let's have fully vaccinated events and that kind of thing. We also recognize that there are people who will do things to go to events, and whether or not they're fully vaccinated or not, you understand? They present a false document. They may, and it only takes one super spreader, really, to be at an event to really get it going. So really and truly, we can't eliminate risk, right? But I would say that we are probably not quite there yet where that risk is at a place where we can do it safely. But should we get there quickly? Should we get there quickly, then yes, I say we should go ahead.
There seems to be a mindset that the vaccinations are silver bullets. So you're talking about, vaccinated travel. The proposal is vaccinated gatherings and fets or whatever the case is, as if the vaccinations are silver bullets. But based on my readings, on the other hand, variants can throw a major spanner in the works where that is concerned as well. How do we go about disavowing persons of the of that notion that, you know, once you're vaccinated, it's a free for all?
These are early days yet. Yeah, and we have to be cautious and careful. All the vaccines don't do the same thing with respect to all the variants. Okay. The one that we have, which is AstraZeneca right now in Barbados, we know is doing well against the UK, the Alpha variant. But not so well against the strain that was found in South Africa, which is now the Beta. So we know that we have to really be mindful should they be introduced here that would affect. But what I will say to you is, it is the silver bullet we have. And for the most part, in most countries of the world, the vaccines are holding for right now against most of the variants that we have. And the more people you have that have vaccinated, the less the transmission will be in the society. Doesn't mean that it is the be-all and end-all. As I said, you can still pick up the virus and transmit it to someone who is unvaccinated, even if you're fully vaccinated. But it is the best tool we have. And the more people who are fully vaccinated, the less any strain, any variant, can pass between the persons.
Now, as a medical professional, I am sure that, you know, you and head of the medical association fraternity, what can you tell me about the type of vaccine hesitancy that you and your fellow practitioners are encountering at this moment?
So vaccine hesitancy in Barbados has been really interesting because, I suspect that maybe in other countries they face the same thing. But we have a young population, when I say young, people under the age of 40 really, who have never really come up and seen those infectious diseases or the ravages of those infectious diseases. They've never really seen measles or mumps or rubella, and they've really never really seen major outbreaks of even chickenpox, right? They've never seen anyone with polio. They don't know about TB. They haven't really seen these diseases. And the fact that many, 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 many children and people used to die of these diseases not too long ago, meningitis and all of these things. They haven't seen the difference that vaccines made. And so they take it for granted because they were given something before they could consent when they were children to go to school. And they never saw that what they were given was actually doing something. So there's a lot of hesitancy from the point of view of, well, I don't really believe that this would really do anything.
Right.
You find the older generations are quite willing to take the vaccine because they do understand how much difference vaccines have made to public health in general. So we see a age differentiation in where it comes to vaccine hesitancy. There are also a lot of people who are hesitant because of a lot of information that's on the internet as well, that has sprung up about vaccines and vaccine utility and where COVID-19 came from and how it's being engineered to this and to make someone else wealthy. This is why this vaccine came up and so on and so forth. The fact is we have a virus that can cause significant morbidity, which is sickness, and mortality, which is death. And that, more importantly, can overwhelm the health services of a country quickly, especially a small nation like Barbados. Another bullet that we have is the things that we've been doing
all along. The protocols, yeah.
Mask wearing and social distancing and hand sanitization. And for the most part, Barbadians have done really well with those things. But the major bullet, let's put it that way, is vaccination, because that then decreases the risk so much more of transmission. So, yes, it may be that we don't know everything as yet. And this is an evolving situation. And no one can tell you if you won't need a booster next year. No one knows that. And I think for some people, just the fact that everything is not tied down, you don't know, makes it a lot more difficult for them to be able to accept. But there's no way we can know all these things in an evolving situation. And so this is one of the situations where you have to look at the evidence as it unfolds. The good thing about us is that we are able to see from other countries as they unfold what has happened. In the UK, for example, we've seen that fall in cases and sort of returned.
We are seeing a move towards making it easier for persons to move about who are vaccinated. We are seeing it even in other countries. We are seeing ministers saying that they're not going to see persons unless they are vaccinated. Now, are we moving towards a trend? I mean, do you see it evolving to a point where vaccinations are going to become mandatory?
The best way I can put that is we have right now, in order for children to go to school, they require certain vaccinations before entry. Okay, so we have made a decision as a country that this is it. Obviously, there will be some people who object, and there will then have to be different things put into place for them. But if you want to access the school system and you have children, go and get them vaccinated so that they can show that they're vaccinated before entering the school system. In a way, that is mandatory, but of course, if someone was a conscientious objector, then they would have to find a different way, because it's because you were vaccinated because you want to enter into a system.
Right.
Okay. When we became doctors or nurses, in order to enter into working with patients in the hospital, there have to be certain vaccinations that we had to have in order to do that. So, if I didn't want to continue my medical education and I wanted to stop short, I could say, well, okay, I'm not into vaccination, I'll stop here. So the privilege to enter into that system, it's not mandatory. I could object. I could withdraw from medical school. But, you know, you understood you had to have hepatitis, you had to have this, you had to have that in order to go to the next step. But there'll always be some health reason for someone not to be able to get something, and we bear and take those considerations in mind. If you want to go to a trip in the interior of Guyana and come back to Barbados, you have to have a yellow fever vaccination. So in order to have the privilege to do that and to return, you have to be vaccinated against yellow fever. So what I'm trying to say is, why are we making this about COVID-19 such a different kind of topic? There are vaccines that we have needed in order to apply for certain jobs, in order to travel to certain countries, in order to take part in certain privileges, all through our lives. And COVID-19 is an infectious disease, just like all of those. If I want to go to the United States and I want to go and stay, I have to show that I have been vaccinated against tuberculosis, right? They're going to ask me about my whole vaccine history. If I want to go and work in Dubai, I have to provide my vaccine history as a part of the criteria for whether or not they select me for the job or not. Let's not make this something that is different for COVID-19, right? If you are in a high-risk industry, if you are face-to-face with people in the tourism industry, if you're in the health sector, etc., schools, etc., where you're dealing with mass gatherings, or you're dealing with people who may be able to transmit things, then it stands to reason that you should be vaccinated. And I think going forward, people who are hired into these industries, it will be required that you have a COVID-19 vaccine. That's not the point. The issue is the people who are in those industries now to continue in their work, whether or not they get vaccinated. That's where, as a country, we're going to have to come together and some consensus of opinion between the labor unions, between the government, between the workers, between all of those have to occur in order for us to realize, well, as a way forward, this is what we are going to do or to recommend. Okay. It's going to take some courage in order to do that because we're not accustomed to those requirements being put upon people.
Okay. Dr. Williams, as we wrap up, I'm going to give you the final word with regards to going back to our reopening efforts in tourism. How do we ensure that we don't veer off the straight and narrow as it relates to these, this new initiative?
In order for it to work, there has to be some built-in amount of monitoring and evaluation. There has to be someone who looks at the process management. There has to be an ongoing built-in review process with reporting back as to how the things are working an actual, when problems occur, we need to drive down into those problems and say, well, look, do we need to change? So we need to be nimble, and we need to have monitoring and evaluation ongoing with regular reporting. I think that's the key to making our protocols work. We don't want to be reactionary when the cat is out of the bag and the horse is out of the stable and the, everything has broken loose and there's a, we don't want to just react. If something isn't working, if something is a problem, if there's a problem, we want to come back to the table and come back to the table and look at it again and again and again. And although that some of that has happened and has been ongoing, I applaud the ministries of health and all the different ministries involved in managing this pandemic so far. But we also, as you know, as stakeholders, need to be able to contribute to when the problems arise, how are we going to go forth, or what is being done to fix them, rather than, so proactive rather than reactive. Yeah. And that is, I think, the key. Proactive, and I think in our call, one of the things we call for in being proactive is to have, you know, a scientific advisory group and body that continuously liaises with all of the different sectors so that we're all on the same page and we're all using evidence base in order to make our decisions. Not just what we feel, but the very best evidence in order to move.
Now, there you have it, folks. Again, Dr. Williams, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us and share your wealth of knowledge on this issue. This has been another episode of State of Our Nation. Thank you all for joining us, and do have a productive day.